Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes Look at This Week in the Capitol. But first, here are the sounds that you're going to hear in this week's edition of Wish I Was There. Here are the issues. Giving DOA more workers, more clout, creating a state agency that would let student debt be refinanced, and a Tommy Thompson Leadership Center at the UW-Madison, new figures on poverty statewide, and a hunting season for whistle pigs. I can't make that up, JR. So let's look at, let's consider Wish I Was There.
What are
No King Walker on my watch. I am completely concerned that we're doing a consolidation of power without accountability within this administration that has already proven an inability to handle what they have.
The system we have right now doesn't work. So we're not trying to look to give away free money, but take some of the money that's tied up in loans that students can't or people who have graduated can't refinance right now. Let them refinance. Let them put some more money in their pocket. Let them buy part of the American dream. Let them get into a house. Let them start a family.
This whole dynamic about the debt. Guess what? If you don't borrow, you don't have the debt.
We need to start counseling kids on financial responsibility. What is your return on investment? How should you be investing in life?
By making sure that we have the Tommy G. Thompson Center, we will continue our efforts to have long-term, bipartisan solutions that bring the best in academia together with the best in government to find long-term solutions that continue to move Wisconsin forward.
The green areas here are no different statistically from the state, around 9.7%, okay? The two blue areas, La Crosse and Milwaukee, are above. Those are still big pockets of poverty. People are hurting in those areas in general. The area west and north of Milwaukee, going great guns, thank you very much, and Brown, Green Bay, and Outagamie, Appleton, doing well too.
That wraps up testimony on 328. Move to 323, requiring an open season for woodchucks, otherwise known as groundhogs, and, say it for me, Senator.
Whistle pigs.
Whistle pigs.
So, JR, so much for the sights and sounds. Now let's talk about the governor on May 22nd, last Monday, tweeted, if I'm right, 18 times. 15 of them dealt with his budget or reasons to pass his budget, the recovering economy, things like that. Help me understand, why has our governor gone to a Twitter storm of governing?
Well, his critics, he's governing by Twitter. Basically, it's his new version of the bully pulpit. And what's happening here is that the Joint Finance Committee has been revising a number of things in his budget, and he's laying down some markers. He's already been talking about the gas tax. We've seen that one for a while.
Right.
The latest kick has been about the property tax cut he wants to do. So we have a state property tax right now that is for forestry services. It's about $180 million in
over
change. Over 2 years. What he wants to do is take state money from the main checking account and basically buy that off. So You and I don't want to pay for it on our property taxes.
$26 on the median valued Wisconsin home.
A couple issues with that. One, the people who get those forestry or support those forestry services are worried about the prospect of having those programs compete with schools, corrections, Medicaid, and the general checking account. Two, there are lawmakers looking for ways to free up general purpose revenue for other things, whether it's borrowing to pay for roads or to cover other programs. They're looking at how this budget fit together. And so that money is kind of in jeopardy right now, especially when, to critics, it's like, is it worth the $180 million for 26 bucks to you and I on our property tax bill? Is that really going to people notice that? Walker is drawing a line in the sand saying, this is a must-have.
Right.
Now it's, I will veto the entire budget, if there is not a net property tax decrease.
Let me be clear. I will veto the entire budget if it includes an increase in property taxes for homeowners. Is that a bluff? Because Fiscal Bureau has no record of any governor vetoing the entire budget.
No. Well, what I'm kind of curious about is the governor still has the strongest veto authority in the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they no longer can write out numbers or letters. The old Bantamweight veto is gone. You can't stitch together sentences to create new ones, but he still can knock out entire pieces. The issue, though, and I'm not an expert about this, is with property taxes, it's not just a one piece of the budget. You have the forestry tax, you have aid to local governments, you have the K-12 funding.
You have shared revenue that offset property taxes.
So you have to get all these pieces in different parts. I'm not sure he could line out and veto enough to make sure there's a property tax decrease in this budget.
Well, okay, but you have the Republican governor threatening to veto the budget adopted by the Republican-controlled legislature. I just ask, is that a reasonable scenario?
I wonder if Walker is trying to browbeat these guys into like his position. Because what you have, it's really interesting. Let's be honest. Republicans have been in charge now for basically 6 years, right?
Since January 2011.
They had that brief like 5 months after the recalls in 2012. They lost control of the Senate. But they've had all the levers of power pretty much for 6 years. They've done all the big things they wanted to do. Now they're arguing about more parochial interests. So you've got that. There's less of a unifying, you know, need right now on big issues. Two, on finance, you have a number of veterans who've been around for several budgets. I mean, Darling and Nygren co-chairs are three budgets in a row now.
Yep.
You have other people who are experts on, like, tax policy, Kuyenga.
Yep.
Go on down the list.
Harsdorff, Ursel, Olson, there's a lot of
So there's a lot of expertise there that they're willing to challenge the governor on things. And I'll go, by the way, go back to 15. You know, the tension that we're seeing right now, let's be honest, it was there in 15, but not out in public.
Right, no, it is.
Lawmakers were not happy about the governor being on the presidential trail while they're trying to hash out a budget, trying to address transportation. You know, I remember being there on Friday night Memorial Day weekend 2 years ago. The governor's on a riverboat in New Hampshire raising money for his presidential bid. These lawmakers are going, we might be back next week, but maybe not be back for a few weeks.
Right.
So there's all this kind of confluence of tension between Republicans because while you can work together for a long time and kind of build up a rapport and have this expertise, you could also have lots of opportunities to annoy each other. And they're just not getting along right now on some big things.
Well, I'm just struck by the governor ratcheting up the rhetoric. I would veto the entire budget, which I have a question whether that's
feasible. By the way, there are Republicans who told me this week that they feel like the governor's now running against them. There's a quote I have from Robin Voss this week that these freedoms like the Milwaukee County Board.
Yes, I saw that in
so,
the report.
And for Walker, he has been viewed for a very partisan lens in Wisconsin for the entire time he's been governor. If he can strike a more independent swath or image with people, it only helps him in 2018. The base loves him. I'm not sure he's going to lose these folks on things like this, but if he can kind of shore up things like K-12 education funding, it makes him in a stronger position for re-election in 2018.
Right. Let's talk about what Joint Finance did last night on the Medicaid budget. If the federal government approved, Wisconsin would be the first state to test some Medicaid applicants for illegal drug use. Now, the Journal Sentinel reports it would be 4,000, but we have more than a million on Medicaid.
Yeah.
So do you have an understanding, because I don't, of what the criteria would be of who would be tested?
I'm blanking off the top of my head, but this is part of Walker. He's said many times in campaign or out talking in public that he hears from employers all the time that they can't find people to fill jobs because they can't pass a drug test. He wants to do these kinds of things because in his mind, this is about preparing people for the workforce. All these things he's doing with Medicaid, Badger Care Plus, W-2, to him, are about preparing people for Medicaid or for the workforce.
Yes.
To Democrats, it's picking on the poor. They don't understand why you want to go out and do this. Although there are some Democrats who are open to the idea of the job training, if it's real job training, the W-2 program, to get people in the workforce.
Well, also, it would also take a federal waiver to require able-bodied adults between 19 and 49 to work or get job training for 80 hours a month as a condition of receiving Medicaid. And then let's talk about two of the food stamp changes. Impose a $25,000 asset limit, excluding home and vehicle, to qualify for food stamps. And finally, start a food stamp pilot program to require parents with children ages 6 to 17 before you become an adult to meet 80-hour monthly work requirements. But the whole backdrop here is how Medicaid would change if the federal government cut $850 billion over the next 10 years. So he's saying, is he signaling that if we got authority, more authority over our Medicaid budget, we would adopt even tougher rules than this to qualify and scale back the benefits?
We'll see. He's trying to take a different tack with social welfare programs to use them, he likes to say this, as a, not a hammock, but a safety net.
Right.
He wants to get people in the workforce. He keeps talking about the 90-some thousand jobs that are available in Wisconsin right now, posted on our state website, that we can't fill these jobs. Well, how do you find people to fill these jobs? To him, it's put more of an emphasis on work training in these programs. And, you know, it honestly plays well with his base, too. I mean, the idea of somebody sitting at home who's able-bodied and just getting a check without doing anything does not sit well with some Republicans. So this is a win-win for him.
But we would be, if we got the federal waiver, we'd be the first in the nation to drug test some of those applying for Medicaid. Let's listen to an exchange between Senator Leah Vukmir and Democratic Senator John Erpenbach on the Medicaid expansion issue last night.
How many insurers have to pull out of the market in the state of Wisconsin, for that matter, across the country, before our colleagues on the other side of the aisle realize that Obamacare is a failure? I welcome the federal government saying, hey, you guys do it, because I know that we know how to do it, and we'll do a good job. We've already done a good job.
It all starts, though, with taking the Medicaid expansion, which I think the majority of the state wants to do that. They believe it's the right thing to do. We're not covering people up to 200% or 150% of federal poverty level. We're covering people up to 133% of federal poverty level. I'd like to see you make a go of it on 133% at the federal poverty level. You wouldn't be able to do it.
Let's stay, JR, let's stay with the interactions between the governor and Joint Finance. Mm-hmm. Now, the governor, as we just said, got most of what he wanted on the Medicaid and food stamp changes.
Yes.
But now let's list a few things where he didn't get what he wanted. State government, self-insure for health care, non-starter with a ledge.
John Nygren, co-chair, is in the insurance industry, so this is a problem. Alberta Darling said it's too risky right now. It's happening with the Affordable Care Act and the possible repeal and replace with the Republican health care bill to do this. We've did it before. It came in higher costs. DOC Secretary Neitzel today had a news conference saying we still believe in this approach. It's going to save more money than we thought before.
It's going to save $103 million, according to Secretary Neitzel.
We need to do this. Premium costs are going to come in higher than we thought otherwise. So they're still pushing for this, but this seems to be DOA with the Joint Finance Committee right now.
The governor recommended freezing technical college tuition. That was a non-starter with Joint Finance.
The argument was it's a good deal as it is.
Yeah. The governor recommended ending the independence of the Judicial Commission. We've talked about that. That
was a non-starter. Tried 2 years ago, next then, too.
The governor recommended, let's loan Milwaukee County $26 million for new buses. And the Finance Committee says, hey, no, let's create a statewide fund where Milwaukee County and other bus systems can apply.
More money for the statewide fund than would have gone to Milwaukee, and less money for the state fleet to replace vehicles of that.
Right. Now let's get into the funding of the UW system that, that Joint Finance approved. Governor, as you know, recommended a 5% tuition cut in 2018-2019. Finance said no. But there was this very interesting exchange, and we can talk about the numbers in a minute. And well, let's talk about them now. So we're not going to have the 5% tuition cut, which would have cost GPR $35 million, but we are going to freeze. The governor wanted to freeze for the first year, 17-18, and now Joint Finance says 18-19. So any major winners there?
Well, the governor's trying to spin this as a win for him because it kept the freeze in place, but he wanted the 5% cut in the second year. That was not going to happen basically from the day he announced that budget, because of $35 million is sitting there that lawmakers could grab to use for other things. So that was one of the issues. For the Finance Committee, Republicans, they're looking at the freeze as their answer to the college affordability question, because Democrats keep hammering on the idea of we should be doing something to help those who have student loan debt.
Right.
The issue with the freeze, Democrats, is that's great for current students, but it does not help anybody who's got a loan out of school for 5 years who has these massive loans. It doesn't help them. What are we supposed to do for those folks? No, by the way, for UW, when you're freezing the tuition, they're not getting more revenue in unless you're backfilling it. Well, the Democrat argument is you're not putting enough money in to backfill what they could have gotten from increasing tuition to account for increased costs. Healthcare goes up, price utilities go up, et cetera, et cetera. So they're making the argument they're not fully funding their freeze.
And the Republicans said, and you're going to hear it in a minute when we go to the audio clips, look, we're giving the UW $36 million more over 2 years in GPR. But Shanklin said, Representative Shanklin said, when you factor in inflation, even at 2%, you're still $19 million short. In fact, let's go right now to the exchange between members of Joint Finance on funding the UW system.
The UW system has not been a priority, not for the governor, not for this legislature, and while we all say good things, especially when the Badgers are good about this and about that, it doesn't, you know, you can't do it for cheap and have it hold up.
This is a significant investment in the UW system. So I just want to be really, really clear about this. This is not a $19 million cut. You're touting yourselves as the champions of students. Well, I think you better look at it. Let's go back to 2003 and 2004. Guess what the raise in tuition was? Just take a guess. Anybody want to take a guess? It was 18.7% increase. Holy mackerel. 2005. Oh my God. A 15.8% increase in tuition. But let's look at the last 4 years. 2013, increase in tuition, zero. Let's look at 2014 to 15. What was the increase in tuition? Zero. If you look at 2015-16, zero. 2016-17, zero. And we're saying a freeze going forward. So let's be clear. Who's really the advocate for affordability and for helping our Wisconsin middle-class families afford a higher education?
Under the last three budgets, the UW system has lost $795 million in state aid. This is your opportunity to fund the UW system, and you did not take it. You failed. This budget puts the UW backwards again for the fourth time in a row. First budget, first Republican budget, 2011, $250 million cut, tuition increase. Second budget, lost state aid from that last cut, tuition freeze not funded. Third budget, $250 million cut, tuition freeze not funded. Fourth budget, $19 million cut, assuming CPI tuition increase. That is shameful. That is not okay. This is morally wrong.
To be fair, JR, now let's talk about some things where Joint Finance has agreed with the governor. Joint Finance says WEDIC should again be allowed to make loans. We've talked about that a little bit. And the governor said, I want a freeze on tuition the first year. He's getting that. He's getting a freeze the second year. Expanding drug tests for participants in the Wisconsin Works. He's got that. And this is interesting. Consolidating all the human resource workers across the agencies and DOA. Mm-hmm. If you look at the numbers, those are hundreds of employees that's going to go to DOA.
300 plus, I believe.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So talk to me about the balance, the give and take, the yin and the yang between Walker and Joint Finance.
I get the impression the Walker administration feels like it's winning on the things it really wants. So tuition freeze, great. You don't want to do the self-insurance. We're going to push for it, but you find the money. But to them, K-12, that's a big thing. No gas tax increase, big thing, right?
I was going to go try one show without mentioning transportation funding, and you just blew it. Okay.
Property tax cut.
Yeah.
So I think if you had to rank the things for Walker, I think those three things are probably the biggest things he cares about. Holding line on, you know, revenues and transportation, saying the reform dividend pays enough to do what we want to do. Property taxes being lower in 18 than when I took before 2010. That is another piece of a stump speech. He's going to run next year. We're pretty convinced about that.
Oh, yes.
He wants to tout that number.
Hired a campaign manager.
Yes. You know.
Told the convention, I'm ready. You ready?
The K-12 funding helps to shore up that flank he's had, that vulnerability about K-12. Because you see all these referendums being approved by people across the state. There's obviously a feeling among people, generally in Wisconsin, that schools need to have more money. And he's kind of addressing that. So you knock those three out, he's going to be in okay shape. In his mind, those are the big things for him.
Okay, new subject. You and I covered Speaker Voss's speech to the Republican convention.
Mm-hmm.
He said that we did a search, and about $2 million was spent, most of them paying for liberal speakers. So what's the coincidence then, 4 days later, the announcement of the Tommy Thompson Center on Public Leadership by the governor, the speaker, and the Senate Majority Leader?
Well, the professor at UW has been pushing this for a while, had the idea. It's in the works for about a year and a half, 2 years. So he insists there's no link. But what's really interesting about this is, one, let's talk about Governor Thompson first. This is a fitting tribute, a lot of ways, to him. The thing about Governor Thompson, he was somebody who was a champion of the university. And you don't have that environment right now in the Capitol with Republicans being champions of the university. Now, they love the Badgers. You know, they think they're doing a lot for the university. But Tommy Thompson was in a different league than these guys came to UW. Somebody told me this week he wore his cardinal red on his sleeve, right? He was a UW graduate. Stem cell research, he was like such a big proponent of that. He loved the university. This is a guy who really felt that was It should be part of the solution, not it wasn't the enemy. So this is a fitting tribute from that way. Plus, if you look at the biggest figures in Wisconsin history for politics,
okay,
three
he
governors,
large, yeah,
La Follette, Thompson, Walker, three most transformed governors in Wisconsin history, those three. So that's a fitting tribute for him. Now, one of the issues, though, was this announcement got kind of a little bit overshadowed by the politics of what's going on between Republicans and the UW. So there's Robin Voss saying it's going to be a bipartisan think tank. But everyone on the board who will direct the research are going to be Republicans or linked to Republicans.
But at that press conference, Speaker Voss said hopefully it will be able to offset some of the liberal thinking. Yes. Going back to what he said at the convention, 2 million. Well, go ahead.
But
go
it
ahead.
Won't be by, it won't it'll be bipartisan research. But it's also going to offset these liberal institutions. Well, how is that going to work? It's $3 million over the biennium. $500,000 of that would go toward other campuses to bring in speakers. I'm going to guess they're not going to be liberals coming in on that money to speak at campuses.
I think that's very important because written in the LFB summary, $500,000. Okay, they get $1.5 million a year, but $500,000 of it must be spent on speakers not on the Madison campus. Mm-hmm. And you're betting they will not be liberal speakers.
They're also going to seek private funds to mm-hmm. help fund the institution. It's just got to get caught up in this whole thing about like this relationship between UW and the Republicans and this push for more diversity and viewpoints. Robin's also got the bill to punish those who interrupt speakers. So it kind of got pulled in that a little bit this week with the announcement.
Well, and Democratic Representative Hintz said, this is nothing but you have to create an academic institution that meets their version of the truth. Are they creating this as the counterbalance to the La Follette School of Public Affairs,
well,
which is perceived as liberal?
I got this week was, well, what about La Follette? Why don't they do the same thing? The argument from Robin was, no, La Follette trains people to be in politics. This would create solutions in politics. I'm not sure if that's how some people view it. There's also red flags among people on campus and faculty about how this is going to work. But, it's... looks like it's going to be approved and put in the budget.
And as somebody on finance noted, there's no mechanism to put a Democrat on this 7-member board.
Not unless you win back control of the House of Legislature, because it's the Speaker of the Assembly,
yes,
and majority in the Senate, who nominates three people each, and the governor picks two from that list to go on the board. So if the Dems went back control of the House, that would be a different story. But right now, it's not happening.
Well, it's very interesting because there was a symposium last Tuesday, and I was part of it. I was on a panel that pointed to Tommy's reforms in education mm-hmm. and the economy and W-2.
Yeah.
So let's not diminish
the
governor's 14 years in office and some of the major reforms.
Again, a fitting tribute for a guy who was one of the most transformative figures in Wisconsin politics.
Yep, but a guy also who couldn't pull it off for the U.S. Senate here just a few years ago. Okay, stock picks.
So rising, Mark Pocan, he was elected co-chair of the Progressive Caucus in the House. Now, let's be honest, they're not in a position right now to really push a lot of policy, right? But it elevates his profile because of the minority. It elevates his profile, so good for Mark Pocan. And also, if Democrats win back to the House next year, which, depending on who you talk to, is a real possibility, it could also elevate his status even more by having somebody there who's a progressive voice in that caucus, when they can direct where it's going to go. And with Pocan, what's interesting, some people I talked this week said, he's not just a liberal who's going to go out there and advocate, these policies that aren't going to work. Mark Pocan is a guy who essentially ran the Democratic caucus in the Assembly when Mike Sherman was Speaker.
And they miss him. They miss him big time.
Joint Finance co-chair. He knew how to run campaigns. He knew how to win or how to, get things done. So here's a guy who can mix both idealism policies plus practical realities of how to get things done. So good for him.
And they wish they had him back in the state capitol.
So next to them, chair race.
Four of them.
Next weekend, going to the convention.
Brian Kennedy, Joe Donovan, Martha Lanning, and
Eric Finch.
Yeah, Eric Finch.
So the question that people have about this race are, one, Martha Lanning, will she get blamed for 2016? Because Democrats lost a lot of things that they expected to win. First time since 1984, Republican won the state's electoral votes. Russ Feingold could not beat Ron Johnson when he was a heavy favorite when he got in that race in early 15. So will she be blamed for that? Or because she's only been chair for a year, they'll say, well, you didn't have enough time to get your policies in place. Will she also be blamed because she originally said, I will support my superdelegate vote, whoever wins the state primary, which was Bernie Sanders, but then went for Hillary Clinton when push came to shove because she was going to be the nominee. Will those things, are they be held against her? And has Brian Kennedy done enough, been a dynamic enough candidate to get enough people out to say, okay, we want change and we want Brian to change it? This is the insider election, okay? We're talking universe of, I believe there are roughly 1,700 and change, 1,800 and change, people eligible to come to the convention next weekend and vote. Of that 1,800 roughly, maybe 1,200 will either show up or stick around for the vote because you have Friday night stuff,
yeah.
Saturday morning.
And you vote Saturday.
Yes.
Yeah.
So those, let's say 1,200 people, just for simplicity's sake, you have to find 601 to win, right? Well, if it's 50-50. How do you do that? You call these people constantly. You keep lists. You're talking to them, trying to find surrogates. I mean, it is a basically a true grassroots election. Now, big picture, Republicans love this. They're saying this is a party disarray. It's a fight for the soul of the party. Good for us because these guys don't have their stuff together. Democrats are saying, no, it's not that big a deal. The whole key is whoever wins next weekend, at the come out of convention, one, can they have a competent staff in place that can build an infrastructure they need to do well in 18? Let's be honest. Tammy Baldwin's not going to have a disorganized operation in Wisconsin running for re-election.
She's going to be a top priority of Dems National.
Two, can the person who's chair not just raise money for the party but convince these national groups? Not just talking about like outside, but like the National Democratic, like the DCCC, those folks, to invest in Wisconsin because they believe that we're in play. They need that infrastructure, that need that investment to pull things off, a better chance to win. So that's the key for the chair.
Okay, and what are we to make of the keynoter, L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti?
I heard he might run for president someday.
And so, also Tammy Duckworth will be speaking?
Yep. So
Senator from Illinois.
Yeah. So they like bringing people from out of state to kind of bring, you know, a little more different voice when they haven't really heard a whole lot. Tim Kaine spoke a few years back, 15 I think it was. So
Joe Donovan says he's the voice of rural Democrats. But he's not very well known.
No.
Right.
I think it's really a race between Martha Lanning and Brian Kennedy. That's the impression I get from talking to people.
Kennedy, former president of AFT.
AFT, mayor of Glendale, I believe.
Glendale, yes. Okay, falling.
So Sheriff Clark, so we're just talking about how this guy says he has a job in the Trump administration.
We had him saddling up and going to Washington last week.
Then he gets the national spotlight even more, and all of a sudden the glare becomes a little bright, and CNN says, oh, wait a second, your master's thesis for this degree you have.
47
instances where you cited the material but didn't put quotes around lifting passages basically from, now, I'm not an academic, but I do know in academics, it's not a no-no to do that. If you're going to use exact language, you have to not just cite it, but put quotes around and make sure it's clear it's using somebody else's words.
That's why God made footnotes.
Yeah. Sheriff Clark says this was a formatting error. This is a hit job. This is not a big deal. Same time, he says it might cost him his job with the Trump administration. Now, remind you, the Trump administration has not said you have a job yet, Sheriff Clark. They haven't announced anything about this. So I've talked to people who are Trump fans, say this is not a big deal. The president is loyal to people. Clark is loyal to him. He's going to be fine. Critics, though, are going, wait a second, this is like a guy trying to tee up an out. If I don't get this job, it's because of this. I can blame these guys for it, not me. Now, along with this all going on, new stories out talking about how I think a Fox 6 news story that they got calendars finally from, I think, early 15, that he was gone, the vast majority, like these eight, no Milwaukee County business listed on his calendars. Now, they were blacked out a lot, but 68 of 80 days or something like that. And another story, the Journal Sentinel, about this whole lawsuit over this seemingly no big deal incident on a plane where Clark was directing his aides or his deputies to show
greet
up.
Greet the plane,
yeah.
And interview, but don't arrest unless this guy...
And they escort him out of the building.
Yes.
Right. So... The bottom line for Clark is he needs an out from Wisconsin. I don't see, when I talk to people, except for a very small, hardcore conservative group that still loves him, people don't see a path for him from Wisconsin anymore politically. He needs his Trump administration's job to have that safety net to get a graceful exit from Wisconsin and go off to that life.
And next week, with the holiday shortened, Joint Finance is not going to, they're not going to get to a lot of the major.
I think the DNR is up on
Wednesday.
They're not going
to fry the major fish.
The DPI and transportation, we're all watching.
K-12, transportation, there's a few other big loose ends still out there.
Yeah.
And then a week from now, we will preview the Democratic State Convention. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May, what's today, 26th?
Yes, sir.
Got it right. Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.